I gave Bill the serious reading so I could be more playful this morning. Thank you, Bill. Okay, this is a story y'all know, but you may not have heard it this way. And I invite you to make it a shared moment. There'll be places for you to jump in. Do so. Feel free. I'm giving you permission. In fact, I would love it if you did. You'll get it. It was six men of Indostan, to learning much inclined, who went to see the elephant, though all of them were blind, that each might observation might satisfy his mind. The first approached the elephant and beginning to fall, and happening to fall against his broad and sturdy side, at once began to bawl, "God bless me, but the elephant is very like a..." The second, feeling of the tusk, cried, "Ho, what have we here? So very round and smooth and sharp, to me 'tis mighty clear. This wonder of an elephant is very like a..." You're getting it. The third approached the elephant, and happening to take the squirming trunk within his hands, thus boldly up and spake, "I see," quoth he, "the elephant is very like a..." The fourth reached out an eager hand and felt about the knee. "What most this wondrous beast is like is mighty plain," quoth he. "'Tis clear enough the elephant is very like a..." The fifth, who chanced to touch the ear, said, "E'en the blindest man can tell what this resembles most. Deny the fact, who can? This marvel of an elephant is very like a fan." The sixth no sooner had begun to grope about the beast, than seizing on the swinging tail that fell within his scope, "I see," quoth he, "the elephant is very like a..." And so these men of Indostan disputed loud and long, each in his own opinion, exceedingly stiff and strong, though each was partly in the right, and all were in the wrong. And the moral, according to John Godfrey Sachs, "So often theologic wars, the disputants, I ween, rail on in utter ignorance of what each other mean, and prate on about an elephant not one of them has seen." I like his version, it's fun. This East Indian tale of the blind men and the elephant is familiar to all of us. And as we read in the translated poem, my favorite line, "So these men of Indostan disputed loud and long, each in his own opinion, exceedingly stiff and strong, though each was partly in the right, and all were in the wrong." Sounds eerily similar to today's politics. Years ago, when we were living in New York City, Michael had a two-hour one-way subway commute each morning and each evening, yes, 4 hours a day. The joys of the city. To entertain himself, and because I am a crossword junkie, he would collect newspapers people's left on the train and bring them home to me. And some days, because it's New York with plethora of things to do, I ended up with 7, 8, 9, 10 newspapers. Great fodder for my crossword habit. And a wonderfully intriguing and unscientific and enlightening glimpse into the reality of today's partisan media. See, I would read the same story in each of the papers and wonder how the facts changed so radically. At that time, I was working in an after-school program for teen girls in Brooklyn. I had a 10-minute walk. I began occasionally taking the various printed, published stories of the same article into class as a show and tell or a show and talk to demonstrate to the young women the tremendous importance of investigating a position, a situation from more than one perspective before reaching an opinion stiff and strong. If you read only the New York Times or feel only the elephant's tusk, you only get one perspective. Likewise, The Post, or Fox News, or CSNBC, or CNN. And I was intrigued because a few weeks ago, a group called Pundefact, which is a part of PolitiFact, did a little experiment, a little more scientifically than my recycled newspaper moment. They researched CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News to determine how honest the three major networks were in their news presentations. Fox only told the truth 18% of the time. In fact, only 8% was always true, and 10% was mostly true. Sadly, 60% of the comments were found to be false. These were their determinants: false, mostly false, or pants on fire. I like that term. The other 22% were half true. So not great news for Fox. But the other networks didn't fare much better. MSNBC only told the truth 31% of the time and was absolutely dishonest 48% of the time. So watch out. CNN was the best. They were honest 60% of the time and dishonest 18%. And sadly, we, the populace, often rely upon the news we receive to inform our opinions. But even the best, CNN was only true 60% of the time. So clearly, we must be cautious about total reliance on any one source. But like the men of Endistan, unfortunately today, and too often in our partisan conversations, we are informed by not completely honest news. And thus, we rail on, all of us, inadvertently though it may be, and utter ignorance of what each other means. And I believe there are two responses to the current partisan situation, and that we as people of faith must lead the way. The first is listening and relearning the art of listening. Not listening ready to pounce at the first breath to point out all the errors in the statements when the other person breathes, and how my opinion is so much better. But, like Keith Dahlbeck expressed at the board retreat a few weeks ago, first to seek to understand before being understood. True listening, with an open heart and mind, and hearing the person behind the position. Because behind every position, like it or not, there is a person, a living, breathing human being, reflection of divinity, worthy of respect and inherent worth and dignity. And entering into dialogue means listening and affirming the worth, even with those who we disagree, affirming all alike. True listening can be difficult, scary, trying work. It requires us to engage with the world in profound and challenging ways. It requires us to examine ourselves, our motivations, our actions, to be fully present and open ourselves to new ways of seeing and being in the world. When we engage with those whose experiences, beliefs, and positions are sometimes profoundly different from our own, we confront a vision of the world that we do not often see, and that a lot of times we don't want to see. But Sharon Welch reminds us in this morning's reading that dialogue is a process of learning to see the world through multiple lenses. And what prevents complacency and self-deluding certainty, or disputing loud and long, under conditions of well-being, it's difference. We need the vision and experience of others to see where our views are partial and/or just plain wrong, inadequate to our depth of understanding, inadequate to our understanding of the depth of oppression, inadequate in our strategies for establishing justice. We need difference. I need to hear about the tusk that you're feeling, and you need to hear about the ear that I'm feeling. And sharing and dialoguing, we might begin to envision the whole elephant. And the other response is dialogue, not debate, a lost art in today's world. It feels like we have forgotten how to dialogue because we are too busy believing that I am absolutely right and the other side is all wrong. But it is only by listening to one another and dialoguing with one another and building trust that relationships can be developed, nurtured, and sustained. And it is only through those relationships that real change can take place in each of us individually and in our community. We affect our world collective when together we do stand. To stand together, we must know one another, trust one another, affirm one another, and ultimately love one another as persons. Until we know, trust, and love one another, we cannot truly stand together. Social commentator Paul Loeb, author of Soul of a Citizen, writes, "New information, and we have lots of that, can give us a sense of the magnitude of our problems and help us develop appropriate responses. But it can't provide the organic connection that binds one person to another. Powerful individual stories create community. And in a time when we're taught that our actions don't matter, stories carry greater weight than ever. They teach us how every gesture, every act, every choice we make sends ripples of influence into the future. Hearing another's stories can also broaden our perspectives on the world and offer a deeper understanding within the larger narrative of being. Opening ourselves to the stories of another means dropping the barriers that separate us from other human beings, admitting that we do not know all the answers. I don't know it all. I need your perspective, especially if we rely on the media for the truth. And listening closely to the world around us. Sharon Welch reminds us that we need difference. In Alice Walker's words, our lives shift when our heart becomes so open that the wind blows through it. And it is stories, personal, sometimes painful, and often poignant, that most often open our hearts, inspiring us and motivating us to act. Jewish theologian Martin Buber describes two different types of interactions. I-it interactions, in his words, are those in which I treat you as an it, not noticing your humanity, just seeking your service, like those times when we exchange money for goods without noticing the person making the change. Or those times when we other the other person often on the other side of the political or religious dialogue. That other person. Without noticing or seeing their humanity, their inherent worth and dignity. On the other hand, he proposes I-thou interactions, those in which I see you and treat you as a person, whose very humanness is as significant and meaningful as my own. I-thou relationships are those in which we allow ourselves to truly see, engage, become fully present to, and enter into connection with another person. And I-thou relationships are far scarier because such presence and connection opens us up and makes us vulnerable. But it is just that connection, just that vulnerability, that engages our hearts, stimulates our compassion, and brings us into alignment with our professed faith. For Buber, we humans come as close as we can to experiencing God in those I-thou interactions. But when we open ourselves up to that vulnerable, open-hearted communication with another's humanness, the interaction can be and often is life-changing. I can find myself deeply moved by the memory of several of those moments in my life, and calling them to mind reminds me of the power. Like Tanya, my mom's 6-year-old hospice patient who beat the odds to survive brain cancer. or George, the babysitting grandfather in Old Man's Park in Oakland, or John, the homeless man in the public garden in Boston, Morgan and Dee, friends for life because we shared our hearts, my mother, my father, Michael, Kevin. When we stop and listen and acknowledge each other's humanness, it is the in-between, the exchange, the interchange between and among us as a community where we foster and feed the magic and majesty and ministry of life. When we experience true joy and ultimate sorrow, ecstasy and anger, when we grow, and when we come closest to understanding life and love and mystery. Perhaps, in addition to listening and dialoguing, as you use, we have something else to offer today's highly partisan world. A way of living with and being amidst uncertainty. Y'all know, in our congregations, there is no creed, no one way to believe, no right answer to questions of God and salvation, faith, personal practice, sin, life after life. Sitting here, I would gather are persons who orient toward and draw inspiration from humanist or Christian, atheist, Jewish, Buddhist, theist, pagan, naturalist teachings, or a combination thereof. Though historically Christian, Unitarian Universalism now explicitly draws from many sources, as described and detailed officially in our principles and purposes. And I am going to read them because these are the parts of those principles and purposes nobody ever reads. We skip over. Direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to all forces which create and uphold life. Words and deeds of prophetic men and women, women and men, which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. Wisdom from the world's religions, which inspires us in our ethical and spiritual life. Jewish and Christian teachings, which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors as ourselves. Humanist teachings, which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science and warn us against idolatries of mind and spirit. Spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions, which celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. Now, before I go on, just be honest. How many ever read those? Okay, we got about half a dozen in here. That's what I mean. We don't often notice those, but those are explicitly written in our principles and purposes in the front of the hymnal, the Unitarian Universalist website. It's all over the place. This is what our association says, where we draw from our strength, what informs us as you use. And it includes a lot of things. We you use have grown comfortable living with and being amidst dialogue. We gather together on Sunday mornings and other times not to convince anyone among us, but instead celebrating our religious and theological diversity. I venture that by nature, we actively resist absolutism of any form. It's an assumption, but I think it's a fair one. Instead, we strive. We don't always succeed, but we strive to live into being the responses I recommended to today's partisan situation. We strive to listen to one another as whole and honored persons. We strive to dialogue, sharing rather than debating about that religiously, that which inspires and nurtures us. Our liberal religious message is foreign to most in our world of absolutism. And our cult of you-you-ism is not going to win the hearts of most of the world. And certainly not most of Henderson County. Yet we can bring our way of being into the public square. And I believe in my being that it is imperative that we do so. Without exaggeration, our world, our nation, our state, our community demands that we do so. One historical example that is now understood differently than it was originally presented in the truthful media. Despite public perception, the Cuban Missile Crisis was not about who blinked. But rather, it was about the earnest, intense, and perhaps desperate diplomacy going on behind the scenes. Collectively, the world breathed a massive sigh of relief when the crisis ended, because we all know that our world will not survive well an all-out nuclear exchange. Nuclear Armageddon is the term. And what brought us back from nuclear Armageddon was dialogue. Effective listening, engaged communication behind the scenes. People talking and listening and communicating effectively. Not necessarily for all time, but effectively enough for that moment. So I challenge each of us, myself included, first, two challenges. First, breathe. May we expand our reading, listening, viewing material, especially given the honesty rating of the major outlets. If you watch MSNBC religiously, turn it off and turn on Fox for a week. Do it. If you read the Wall Street Journal, read the New York Times. Take the time to learn what the other side is saying. And I mean really listen, don't yell back at the TV, don't dismiss all the editorials as bunk. But in listen, engage, hear. It can be very, very difficult. But remember the men of Endostan. We too can be rightly accused of feeling only the trunk or the tail, seeing only what we want to see. To engage in dialogue, we need difference. We need to gain a new perspective, even one that might be unpalatable to us. And none of us can claim that our preferred media is unbiased. Recall that CNN was the most honest and they got 60%. Well, 60%, going back to school, guys, that's a D minus. All right, how good is a D minus? You've barely skated through on the skin of your teeth. And MSNBC and Fox are worse. They haven't even passed. So who in the media is completely neutral? Let us move from our preferred tusk or ear, or leg, or side, or tail, expanding our perspective and seeing a greater picture of the elephant. And the second challenge is to truly listen, hear, dialogue, and communicate with the other side. Again, this is very difficult. From personal experience, I know how very, 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 very tempting it is to other the other side, rather than engage. Last election cycle, my organization was accused publicly, wrongly, unfairly in my opinion, of voter fraud. My first reaction was frustration, indignation, hot-blooded anger, and I moved rapidly into self-righteousness. Because no one had called me or tried to talk to me. They just started a rumor that ended up in the email box and it ended up on the front page of the Lightning and the Times News. So I opened my paper one morning and there we are. Hey, ain't nobody called me. But my reactions, honest and real though they were not productive to the dialogue nor the overall mission of my organization. Engaging in angry exchange was not and would not have been productive for dialogue, for community relations, and most importantly, not for the patients that we were there to help. It would only add fuel to the fire. As a person of faith, as a minister, As an engaged citizen working to build community and not add to the partisan angry exchange, I needed to check myself. I needed to move beyond those immediate reactions. I needed to have my feelings and then put them aside in order to enter into the dialogue. I needed to be present to see and hear the accusers as persons with inherent worth and dignity, concerns and fears. Not concerns and fears that I owned or shared, but ones that were real and valid for them. For only in honoring their concerns could they feel heard and be willing to engage in dialogue with me. This is hard, excruciating at times, profound, life-changing work, but it is work that our world desperately needs. To bring our faith, which draws from multiple sources and does not profess one right way, to bring our respect for the inherent worth and dignity of each to listen and to dialogue, to check our opinions stiff and strong, to admit that our view too is partial, to truly welcome difference, not just theological, but political and cultural. Perhaps it is we, one dialogue at a time, that can help reinvigorate communication and recreate community. May it be so, and may we be strong for the presence, for the listening, and for the communicating. Amen.